I have a deep relationship with ticket boxes. Okay, I went to the DMV the other day, and you know why you hate the DMV? This is a joke, because I'm going to say something mean to you right now. You know why you hate the DMV? Because when you're there, you're just like everybody else, you know? You're like, what the fuck? I have to wait in line just like these poor people, these heathens? Isn't there another line for me? Isn't there some kind of card that I can swipe? No, there's not, and also, these disgusting poor people that are in there with numbers higher than you or closer to you, when they get up to that counter and they're like, oh, surprise, you got to pay another $85 for this thing. That matters to them, you know. Doesn't matter to you, fictitious, pretentious listener. No, anyways, but it's a joke, right? I'm talking about myself. Like, I'm like, why do I hate? I sat in the DMV and I thought about, why do I hate this so much? And that was the dark answer that I came up with, is that in the DMV, there's nothing you can do to be better than anyone else, or is there? Because I think I had a small victory at the DMV as well. I mean, like, it's painful, right? I procrastinated for forever. The last time I went to the DMV, I got a parking ticket while I was in the DMV. I mean, try to wrap your mind around that for a moment. Anyways, but so I'm sitting there and I'm thinking about what bothered me. You know, it bothers me, of course, that suddenly there's this profound, like, Stalinist equality put on everyone, right? I mean, that level of equality is bothersome to any American. And also, it bothers me that there's nothing I can do to make this better for the person that's helping me. You know, it's just a constant stream of bullshit. Like, there's no reason for them to go faster. There's no reason for them to do anything better. It's not like you're trying to sell more driver's licenses, you know? Like, the market is there and it's full. And so, like, God, that job must suck. I mean, it just must really suck. But anyway, but I am a customer service manager, and I think that I can make this somehow special for the person that's dealing with me. And we start to talk, and it's kind of interesting. There's actually an error on my driver's license, and it says that I need corrective lenses. And I do not, man. I do not need corrective lenses. So I tell that to the person, oh, it's an error. I don't need corrective lenses. And it occurs to me now, they probably hear that all the time because people are fucking weird about their glasses, right? And they don't want to wear them. So anyways, they're like, oh, that's fine. We can give you the driver's test again, or the vision test again, you know, read line number two, which I do promptly, accurately, with gusto, you know? And then they're like, now which side is the blinking light on? And I say, both sides, bitches. I mean, I don't say bitches, but they tried to hoodwink you. That's the move. So if you want to, you know, drive without your glasses because you got some weird personality disorder. maybe that's too strong of a word, but that's how you beat it. When they say which side, it's probably both sides because they're trying to trick you. But anyways, when I proved myself to be an honest victim of a bureaucratic error, they were nice, and I believe they authentically said, have a nice day. And I think my banter was nice. There was a credit card problem, and I love to regale people with stories of credit card trauma while they're fixing the machine, and I think it went pretty well. So I don't know if that's a real story, or maybe it's just a warm-up story. Regardless, right now I'm obsessed with the concept of coming clean. I feel this huge urge to come clean, and I think that's really weird because I have this podcast where I try to be as honest as I can about everything, but I guess there's levels of honesty even beneath current levels of honesty. Okay, yeah, speaking of this subject, I learned something. There's therapists for therapists. Do you know this? There's therapists that specialize in therapists. So it's like, if you're a therapist and you need someone to talk to, you go to a person who specializes in therapists. So then I was like, wait, are there therapists for the therapists for the therapists, right? Some uber meta therapist? And what's that person like? Maybe that's Oprah. Anyways, but so, right, infinite therapists, right? Which reminds me of a story about this, you know, a book about the nature of the universe that I read one time, and they talked to like a native of some, you know, a native person, an indigenous person. And they said that the world was actually on the back of a great turtle. And the anthropologist said, well, what's underneath of the turtle's back, or what holds up this turtle? And the woman says, you can't fool me. It's turtles, turtles, turtles all the way. I love that story. It's also therapists, therapists, therapists all the way. And apparently it's honesty, honesty, honesty all the way, because I keep finding myself trying to get to a deeper motherfucking level, right? Oh, and now I'm at this point, do I even want to tell you this story? But I mean, maybe it's a story, I think it's the story that I've just been telling. I'm just going to keep retelling it till I get to the fucking truth of the matter, you know? But here's a story. It's about St. Louis, of course. You know, so let's just hit the details, right? Like, I moved to St. Louis, Missouri, and I have been raised in an intensely educational environment. I was thinking today, I was listening to Pink Floyd's The Wall, and I thought, the first time I heard We Don't Need No Education, I didn't even know what the fuck that meant. I did not know that there was life outside of education. I thought education and life were merged as one. So I moved to St. Louis on a whim. I go to commuter school, which is not a good idea. There's no culture. And I arrive and my parents get divorced and my family dissolves. So I'm alone in the streets of St. Louis, literally wandering about looking for a family, you know. And I mean, a lot of things happened, you know, a lot of things, that stories that I'm going to try to get to, that I'm going to try to remember about that time. But I tried, the Sierra Club kind of worked as a family for a while. And then I tried to use school as a family. And that's a bit longer story, you know, university as family. But the one day it really worked is when I got my second job at a movie theater, you know, like when I got back into the movie theater. I mean, really, if I feel more at home in a movie theater than I do anywhere else, than I do in my own home, you know? But so this is round two at the movie theater, and it goes great. I mean, I make friends again. I just do so well. There's so much free time to talk, and it's an independent movie theater, and I'm in college, so it's, the money is enough, and it's great. I make great friends. I learn things about myself. I learn about boxing. I learn about music. I learn about racial dynamics. I learn about, you know, African-American culture on a personal level. And crazy great things happen while I work here at this third theater. But also, I spend a lot of time in a ticket box, right? And to this day, I just spent the afternoon in a motherfucking ticket box. Let me tell you, I have a deep relationship with ticket boxes. And so the ticket box at this particular St. Louis movie theater is like, the theater's in a 5-star hotel, right? It's on the bottom floor of a hotel. So the theater itself, it's got like an entrance, but it's an entrance into a large and grand hallway. And you walk down this hallway, and there's the coat check by the kind of the main entrance, and there's the ticket box. So when you're there, and this is pre-cell phone, right? You are isolated in the ticket box. I mean, you have a walkie-talkie, and people call you and things like that, but it's just you alone in this box. And I have attention deficit disorder, and I'm in college, and this ticket box is the perfect place for me to be. There are zero distractions, and I get to work, you know? I'm getting a communications degree, right? This is what I'm coming clean about. I'm coming clean about my fucking credentials, you know? False modesty. False modesty. Fuck us and our humble fucking roots. It's such a lie that we all tell. Our humble fucking roots. That's not my story. I have a downward mobility story, but this is just a stop along the way. It's an up and down story. But so I'm in the ticket box and I read this book called Four Arguments for the Elimination of Television. I don't know if you've read this book. Chuck Klosterman wrote a whole bunch about this book. This is 10 years before Klosterman wrote about it. I read this book and I'm very affected. If you want to get real about your relationship with technology, even though this book is about television, it's written in the 70s, like it really draws the line. And it's pretty easy for a smart person, if they're so committed, to say that television is the worst thing that ever happened to us as a people. But I won't get into that. But I read this book and I develop a media theory based on this book. So I develop a media theory about kind of community sourced media and a way for the local news to actually serve the people that it intends to rather than just serve advertisers. And I also plot out a documentary about people and their relationship with their television sets, right? all this from the ticket box. And I work in the ticket box on my theories, and then I go out and I hang out with the ticket people, and we get off of work and we drink beer and we do things other than drinking beer because we're movie theater employees. And I'm not going to talk about it, but you know what we do. We actually don't drink beer. We quote unquote, we drink green beer. Okay. What else can I say? And, it's a great experience, okay? But the thing is, my theory about local media serving local people, I mean, it's not, it wasn't 100% original, but I was definitely the lead on this, was a really good idea. You know, people are still using this theory today, right? I don't want to get into that, but I, you know, it's out there. And my documentary went well, and everybody liked it. And so because of this, I won an award, right? I won the Walter Cronkite Scholarship from the Television Academy, right? It's given to, I don't know if we're going to bleep that name or not, but it's given to the top communications graduate in the St. Louis metropolitan area, right? So that's Washington University, University of Missouri, St. Louis, Southern Illinois University in Edwardsville, some other for-profit university, including my own, right? And so I'm getting an award at the local Emmys, right? And where do you think the local Emmys are? Well, I mean, by local, I mean the regional Emmys, right? It's like St. Louis, Kansas City, Iowa, I think Little Rock, Arkansas, you know? So all the television people, the local news people come, and it's at the hotel where my movie theater is. It's right next to the ticket box where I did all of my research and all of my everything. I mean, literally, I check my coat at the identical window for the Emmys right by where the ticket box is. So I go and I'm in my tuxedo, you know, and I'm there now with all of these major media professionals that I've impressed with my populist vision for the future of the news. And we're waiting in the hallway and I find myself in my tuxedo looking through the window of the movie theater that I looked at. And there are all my friends in the movie theater. You know, and I give them that proud wave, like the wave that I think they want, which is, I made it, you know, one of you is out. And their response was muted at best, you know. I realized in that moment that that's the thing, is I wasn't a part of them anymore, you know. I was now a producer. And they weren't going to be able to relate to me the way they used to because my problems were different. And I experienced a great deal of sadness, and but I accepted it. And I walked into the Emmys with my new friends, the television community, trading movie theater employees for television producers. And this might make you mad, or this might be some kind of big generalization or whatever. That was a huge downgrade in intimacy and compassion and all the thing that friendship is about. My new television friends didn't hold a candle to my movie theater friends. So I go in and I sit down at the Emmys. I don't know how to end this story. I mean, this is clearly part of a big story, but I sit down, and the thing is, when you're the new person at the Emmys, right, you get the table that's right up front, okay? Because all the tables in the back, those are taken by the old timers, so they can bounce in and out, they can go to the bar, they can run errands, whatever. But I'm right there in the front table, surrounded by the members of the Television Academy, a cardinal from the Catholic Church, and various spouses, whatever. So I'm sitting there, my mind is blown, you know, I'm in a tuxedo here. It's an award ceremony. There's big statues on either side of me, you know? And I'm there to get a check and applause for my accomplishments. I've never won a scholarship. And so one of the guys at the table, like, nobody knows what to say to me, you know. I do have a large ponytail at this time. This old man leans over and he's like, have you ever been to Geneva? And I say, why, no, I have not been to Geneva. And he says, it's horrible. And in my head, I'm like, it's horrible. How can Geneva be horrible? What kind of person are you that you would just write off Geneva, Switzerland? And he's like, yeah, it's full of Arabs that light their cigars with $100 bills. You know, welcome to the fucking belly of the beast, you know. And I can tell you, You know, I should have known. I did not make it out unscathed. You know, I did not. So, I don't know. I mean, maybe this is like some kind of fucking Tarantino thing where I tell you the beginning of this, you know, I tell you 25% of the way into the story. I mean, the other reason is I talked to one of my mentors and he said that I needed more exposition or whatever, that I need to explain where I'm coming from a little bit better. I love to just, you know, say something audacious and make big leaps of logic because it's fun, but I think I might be able to do something a little bit more powerful if I just tell you where I'm coming from a little bit more, maybe paint the picture. The thing is, I don't think you're stupid, right? That's why I don't want to explain more, is because I don't want to be redundantly explaining some bullshit that you understand. I hate that, but of course, you know all kinds of things about all kinds of things that I know nothing about, you know? So maybe when I know about something, I should just lay it out a little bit longer, you know, still lean and mean, but just a little bit longer. So anyways, that's me. I am the wayward winner of the Walter Cronkite Scholarship. What happened to Dave, you know? What happened to his TV show? What happened to his powerful friends? It's a long story. In my head, I just wrapped up the story, but then it's like I'm trying to get to new levels of honesty, right? Trying to tell the truth of it, and there's a part that I unintentionally left out of this story, but it's a true part, and it's a good and happy part, you know? So I do, the guy tells me that Geneva sucks, and, you know, I'm sitting there, I'm so alone, you know? Why didn't it bring a date? I mean, that's a part of it, you know? Why didn't bring a fucking date? There's a story, why I didn't? God. Talk about the keys to a young woman's heart. Come to the Emmys with me while I get an award. Anyway, so I go up there and I get my check, you know, the winner of the Walter Cronkite Scholarship, David Good. And they've told me that I am not going to say any words, that you're just going to hand me the check, you know. But they push me. I stand there and, like, you know, talk about a moment of pure terror for my beloved podcast recorder, Patrick, right? I get my check and then they push me in front of the mic and it's like, I got to say something, you know? So I got nothing prepared. So what I say is, thank you all very much. I truly appreciate this. And walk off the stage. Okay, which, by the way, was the greatest acceptance speech that night. Like, you don't need anybody saying like, oh, the gifts I've received from the Lord to win this fucking, you know, weather editing Emmy that I'm sharing with five people, which everyone did, you know, how magical their life was. But I get done and I walk off, and running into the Emmys is the owner of the movie theater. And he's like clearly throwing his tie on or whatever. And he runs in and he gives me a hug. You know, he gives me a hug. And it was real. Like, I don't want to say that my friends at the theater weren't supportive and that theater wasn't supportive. It was completely and totally supportive, you know? Anyways, but I did. But that, again, me in the theater, you know? God, and I forgot about that. That hug from Harmon. Harmon, thank you for the hug. It meant a lot, you know? Certainly wasn't a hug like my, I never got a hug from either of my parents like that. Like, way to go. Thanks for breaking through, Dave. And speaking of that, I don't know about podcasts to come, but I don't know if you guys know much about David Sedaris. Oh, wait, okay, one more Emmy story from the Emmys. I think I should cover one more, right? I mean, don't you kind of want to know what happened at the rest of the Emmys? Okay, so what's crazy is this is the Emmys that's post 9/11, right? It's the first Emmys after 9/11. And so all these people have put their 9/11 news broadcast. They've submitted it. So they'll get an award for their amazing journalism on that day, right? Which is f***ed up. And they did not get rewarded for that. But so it's all this. I'm watching 9/11 clips, right? And then they get to the award for best news feature. I came up with a fake name, though, for best news feature when I was taking a shower before I came over here to do my podcast, all right? This wasn't the name of it, right? But they're like, okay, these are the nominees, blah, 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 blah. And this was not the name, but this was basically the name. Preschool stabbing. Okay? And they're like, and the winner for best news feature is preschool stabbing. And like the news producer like jogs up. Yes, thank you, thank you. He's like, I mean, I feel bad for those preschoolers, but woo, you know, celebrates. Because when you're in the news, you have no, I mean, it doesn't faze you. I mean, it's literally, there's an earthquake and 100 people die and you are excited, you know. That's the kind of people we're talking about here. They get excited about their Emmy when the fucking walls are falling down. It's fucked up. Okay, but anyways, David Sedaris, right? And I'll finish with this, but I think this is kind of... Okay, so what I've heard, you know, this is not in any... Is that David Sedaris' family hates him, right? That it did not go well. He told all of these stories and... You know... I think he kind of messed something up. And I mean, I've heard that. That's a warning that I've gotten. Like, Dave, don't talk about your family on this podcast because you don't want to be like David Sedaris and, you know, fuck up your family's relationships. Which is valid. Which is valid. But, God, they deserve it. Not all of them, but a couple of them. I mean, it's just hard. I mean, I would love to. I'm so funny around drinks. With drinks, I can tell you stories about my parents that you would never believe, you know, my Wes Anderson Royal Tenenbaums existence, you know, but, so I don't know, we'll see, but it's possible. I had a dream, and I think the dream told me that maybe it's okay to talk about my mom a little bit. We'll see.
You've been listening to The Dave Good Show.